The Lizard King by Stephen Dees. Read by Sam Devereaux. Shuffling of feet, the drone of idle chatter. A train comes. No one seems to notice when it stops in the tunnels between Warren Street and Euston, or when the doors open into a dirty brick wall. The lizard man picks up his briefcase and walks out. The doors close. The train moves off. The faces around Howard are blank. Nothing out of the ordinary has happened. The lizard man is there again the next day. Same time, same place, same people standing around him. He looks like a regular, the way he stakes out his place on the platform near the edge. His snake-whip tongue cracks now and then, snatching passing mice from their myopic lives. Howard stands behind him this time, careful to keep a few people between them. He doesn't want to get close, but the crowd doesn't like it, jostling to remind him he isn't where he's supposed to be. The commuter rush is a living thing. The rule of the waiting herd is simple. No eye contact. It resents how Howard pays attention now, as though it knows that one of its parts isn't playing the game, but doesn't quite know who, or where, or how. Howard knows them, the same faces, day after day. The rumpled, folded one, too much skin and not enough skull, who always has a seat somehow, barricaded behind his evening standard. The young suits, sharp dresses, slicked back hair, striped shirts, three or four, not always the same, but always the same place and the same presence, loud and expansive. The painted secretaries and the unpainted ones, the quiet woman who sits in the corner bunched into herself behind a book, the young man, stubble-faced, jeans and t-shirt, who stands as close to her as he can and sneaks glances into her cleavage when he thinks no one is looking. The older man with the thinning hair and the dark, almost Latino skin, who watches the young man doing it and scowls because in his mind he wishes he could do the same. And the lizard man. Newspapers rustle. Book pages turn. Braying laughs don't stop. Pressed together, the crowd has no secrets, and so, by unspoken consensus, it sees nothing. At the weekend, the lizard man is a no-show. On Monday morning, Howard must explain why he's an hour late into the office, something other than the truth, riding the train back and forth looking for the lizard man to board. In the evening, he travels home with a friend, Rogie. The lizard man is obvious, blatant, but Rogie doesn't see it. The train comes. They all board the same carriage. "Okay," says Rogie. "Where is he?" Howard points him out with quiet words. Though if Rogie was ever going to see yellow eyes and a green lizard head, then he'd have seen without needing direction.
"You mean the Asian guy?"
"What Asian guy?"
"The one standing just behind the redhead and in front of the black dude."
There is no Asian guy. There is a man with a lizard head. Rogie thinks Howard is going crazy, stress maybe, too much caffeine. Another stop goes by, Warren Street. Howard grabs hold of Rogie's arm.
"We're going to stop."
Tubes stop in the tunnels all the time. Happens every day, probably a slow train ahead. Rogie shakes his head.
"You need help, man."
"He's going to get off."
"We're in the tunnels, Howard. He can't get off."
The train grinds to a halt. The doors open.
"See? The doors!"
Rogie can't hide the worry in his face.
"The doors are closed," he says.
The lizard man pauses to sniff the air and then steps calmly into the black outside. The doors close. The train begins to move again. Rogie is frowning. He gives a strange look and pushes to where the lizard man was standing. The crowd hates him and vows vengeance. But by the time the train stops at Euston, Rogie has inspected every face and made no secret of it either. On the platform, he watches the train recede. He stares after it, long after it's gone.
"You're fucking with me," he says.
They argue. It has to be a joke, a trick. No one can vanish between stations. The doors were closed. In the end, Rogie storms away. He's seen something he can't resolve. It scares him. He is angry and humiliated. Howard thinks he should try seeing a man with a lizard head and see how he feels then. The next evening, Rogie is already there, waiting. He waves a phone. The lizard man is also there, same place, same time, right on cue. Howard nudges Rogie.
Standing in front of the tall black guy.
Same guy I saw yesterday. Asian.
Bold as brass, Rogie points his phone at the lizard man. Takes half a second of video. On the screen, the lizard man is no longer a lizard. Howard doesn't quite know how this ought to make him feel. It's one madness swap for another. Maybe he should get some rest. Take a few days off. Maybe he's been working too hard. People have nervous breakdowns from working too hard. Maybe he should see a doctor. Or maybe it's too late. Maybe the next stage is to wander around naked, digging holes in the back of his garden in the middle of the night. I don't have a garden, Howard says.
You can see he doesn't have a lizard for a head now, right? I think you need to see a shrink.
They board the train. Three stops as always, and then it slides to a halt between stations. Rogie pulls the phone out again. The doors open. The lizard man gets off. The doors close. The train moves away. Rogie pushes his way through the carriage, inspecting faces. The crowd hates him again. The faces don't expect to be noticed. It's not the way of things. At Euston, Rogie and Howard look at Rogie's video. They see the doors open. The Asian guy is there, still with a human head. He steps off the train, clear, plain as the sun in the sky. Rogie plays it over and over, staring like he's seen his own death.
No way, he says. That didn't happen.
Then they get drunk together, throwing the strange lizard man into an oblivion of wine. Howard sleeps badly that night, tossing and turning, strange dreams. He sees men in suits peel back their faces and show the lizard beneath. Lizards, snakes, yellow eyes, narrow slit pupils. They carry him down a night-lit street as though a coffin. He sees a couple necking in an alley, a drunk, a police car. The drunk stares and rubs his eyes in disbelief, then turns to relieve himself behind a green plastic dustbin. The others see nothing. When he wakes, he phones in sick. A gulp of water and then a rush to the bathroom to vomit up the night before, clutching his toilet bowl like a lover. He stumbles to the basin, scooping handfuls of water to wash away the grime of sleep and the taste of bile. He looks at himself in the mirror. A head of dull green scales stares back, yellow eyes with narrow black slits, the flicker of a long forked tongue. Howard screams. The mirror slides to the floor with the roar of an onrushing train. The ceiling spins to take its place. He crashes and lies still. He wakes in the middle of the afternoon to the throb and lethargy of a hangover's end. The lizard is still there in the mirror, but that's okay. He doesn't feel human now, not remotely. He feels hungry. He goes outside. The sun is bright and its warmth is heaven. Birds sing. He drools, watching them in the trees, joyful at the heat of summer. Children walking their way home from school glance at this strange man beating his chest at the sun, and then glance away, back to their idle conversations of football teams and trading cards and Xbox and YouTube. They don't see what he is. Something moves in the bushes. Without a thought, Howard's mouth yawns. A rope-like tongue snaps and lashes and snatches a flutter of wings. Howard swallows it whole. The feathers tickle. He dresses. Too late for work, but not too late for the rush. He rides the tube to Warren Street and sits on the platform and waits. The crowd grows as afternoon sinks to evening, the pulse of it as trains come and go like the rhythm of a slow beating heart. No one sees him while he sits, only when he stands. Then they embrace him, warmer than before. He spies Rogie.
Hello, Rogie, he says.
Rogie looks at him. Not the blank, unseeing gaze of just another part of the crowd, but with eyes that stare and see, really, truly see. His mouth droops. He screams, turns,
runs.